Come on, Robin. To the Batcave. We haven't one moment to lose.
All right, Bat fans, welcome back to Beyond the Batcave, the Batman-centric DC Movies podcast. I am your co-host, Taylor Jackson.
And my name is Andy Piper. We're here with a little bit of news, a little bit of everything today. It's going to be a jack-of-all-trades episode, but we hope you enjoy it.
Yeah. So first we want to hit on a little bit of news, as Andy said. So the Wrap is reporting, first a little bit of Justice League news, the Wrap is reporting that someone in the Green Lantern Corps will make an appearance in a key moment of the Justice League film. Now they said it's not going to be Green Lantern as we know him as part of the Justice League, but still, that is very exciting. What do you think about this news, Andy?
I'm pretty excited about this because I was very bummed that we weren't going to be seeing Green Lantern until part two. I'm perplexed as well. It's very strange, the choice of words here. A member of the Green Lantern Corps, but they specified not Green Lantern. Right. So they're all Green Lanterns. Let's get that straight. So who's this going to be? I don't know. I think my most likely possibility, and I've seen other people saying this online, is it's going to be Abin Sur, who was the original Green Lantern of the sector of space that contains Earth, and Hal Jordan is the one that finds his ring. However, we just saw that in the movie from 2011, so I don't know that they'll be keen to remind us of anything that happened in that movie. Warner Brothers seems pretty much like they're distancing themselves from the Ryan Reynolds Green Lantern as much as they can. So second guess is that it's a different human Green Lantern that maybe we just find out lives there, and maybe this is his introduction.
Yeah, but they didn't specify which Green Lantern it would not be, right?
Yeah, so like maybe this just means it's not Hal Jordan, which to me is a little bit of a bummer. He's getting kind of a bad rap these days, but Hal Jordan is one of my favorite comics characters. Mm-hmm. I'd be stoked to see either Kyle Rayner or Jon Stewart. Jon Stewart is overdue, honestly. He's earned his place in a movie. If we get him on the screen, I'll be stoked. But I do not want to see Guy Gardner. I freaking hate that guy. He's just an annoying Green Lantern.
Yeah, you're not alone in that sentiment.
Anyway, so this is an interesting tidbit. One other thing that people will complain about is that it was reported by Humberto Gonzalez, formerly known as El Mayimbe. Now, let's get something straight here as well. He's had a pretty good track record. I think we've talked about this in the last couple months. He used to work for Latino Review, and he would just throw out whatever. He'd throw all of his stories at the wall and see what stuck, and someone would even contradict. It was just a bunch of crap, really. But since he started working for The Wrap, he has had a pretty good track record of really knowing what's going on. Clearly, he's got some contacts inside Warner Brothers and DC Films now. So I never thought it would come to this, but I trust Humberto Gonzalez and what he reports.
Yeah, no, I agree as well. And it makes sense, you know, thinking about it. Because, I mean, a lot of people are bummed that we're not going to see Green Lantern. He's not going to be part of this team. The least they could do is open up the universe and extend it to include, you know, the Green Lantern Corps. And so that, you know, we know we can look forward to seeing them. So I think,
yeah,
I think that's the important thing here.
It's got to be a key member, though, because just combing through my brains, there's thousands and thousands of Green Lanterns
right.
that it could be, but it's not going to be like some random one. It's not going to be that planet that's a Green Lantern. Like, that would be just silly if he showed up. It's right. got to be somebody that is related to the mythology of the Green Lantern of Earth. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
Like, I do think this is either going to be Abin Sur or it's going to be a human Green Lantern. Because there's nothing else that would have impact in a big budget movie like this. Mm-hmm. It's got to be Jon Stewart.
Well, especially because...
That's my new official guess. Jon Stewart.
Especially because they bring up that they show up at a key moment. It's not just like, oh, they're going to make a little cameo.
Yeah, it's not like, an Easter egg.
Yeah.
Because if it was that, I would say, you know, maybe it's Hal Jordan's girlfriend, or it's like Hal Jordan Sr. We see like a memorial to his plane that crashed or something. But a key moment? Okay, first of all, I know we're getting a key moment when Superman comes back, so that's going to be awesome. If we have another key moment with a Green Lantern, I'll be pretty psyched.
Yeah.
Especially, Oh, never mind. This is not the Green Lantern Beyond the Ring podcast, so we won't go too far into it, but I just really like Green Lantern.
Yeah. All right, so yeah, that's the news. It's hard to make up kind of what we're going to see, how it can be someone of the core but not a Green Lantern. So we'll see, but we're excited to know that there it will be some inclusion of the Green Lantern.
Yeah, that makes me really happy.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
The only thing I'll say now is I better not get a hint of this in any trailer.
Yeah, seriously.
If I see Superman in a trailer, unless it's like, I mean, I could always eat my words, but I just don't want to see Superman in a trailer.
That's true. Yeah.
But Green Lantern, that's even worse. If you show me a Green Lantern in a trailer, I'm going to sue somebody. Probably myself. Okay.
Let me know how that goes for you.
Yeah.
The second little tidbit of news, William Dafoe spoke a little bit about his role in Aquaman. Now, we've known for a little bit that he is Vulko from Aquaman, and he says that his role in Aquaman will be, what he says, quote, a principal role.
I think that makes a lot of sense, considering what I know about the character.
Yeah, what do you know about Vulko? What can you tell us, Andy?
Okay, so correct me if I'm wrong here, listeners. I know you will. Vulko, I've read him in the New 52, and if we're going back to the exiled Aquaman theory that I bring up all the time, in the New 52, Aquaman, like, didn't really know his origin for a while. Vulko was the guy that showed up, told him he was half Atlantean, and that he was the rightful heir to the throne, and brought him back to Atlantis. Later, we find out that Vulko was a traitor, and he actually wanted Arthur off the throne. I think that happens in the Throne of Atlantis run. I'm not super sure about that, but Vulko was a key player in all the Aquaman storylines from the New 52, and so it doesn't surprise me at all that he says his role is going to be principal in Aquaman.
Yeah.
And I mean, makes sense.
It does make sense. And even taking, because I don't know a lot about Vulko, I haven't read a ton of Aquaman, but even just thinking about from the actor's standpoint, and I really can't just base it off of this, but William Dafoe, he has a pretty commanding presence in most everything that he's in.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I would feel he would be greatly underutilized if he was just like this servant or this, you know, kind of like backstage sort of presence, you know? Like, I fully expect when I hear William Dafoe is going to be in this movie that he'll be in it.
You know? Yeah, you know, he's too high caliber to just sit on the sidelines.
Yeah.
Although that can happen. I mean, we've seen plenty of movies where they're so star-studded that not everybody can have a big role, you know?
That's true. And
Batman Begins, for example.
Yeah.
That movie was full of just class A actors, and but he said his role is principal, so let's not worry about it.
Yeah.
We're talking the Green Goblin here.
That's what I was thinking.
All right.
Awesome. And then, so that's all the news we have right now. There is a little more, but we'll get back to that, some of the smaller news.
If we deem it worthy,
in a future episode.
I guess we could talk about this, that there's possibly a Justice League trailer on the horizon very soon. If it comes out in the next week, you know, we'll be doing an episode about it, breaking it down, talking about it, but I really don't know what this is based off of. Oh, it looks like the host of DC All Access just tweeted something that made people think that there's a trailer coming. I'm super excited to watch something at hashtag DC Comics today. Hashtag secrets. Well, that's quite suggestive.
Yeah.
Jason Inman, host of DC All Access. He posts a picture of himself on Instagram, looking shocked in front of a computer. Okay. So we've got some big movies coming out over Christmas.
We do.
It wouldn't be a bad idea to have an official Justice League trailer attached to them, because we do not have a fully cut trailer yet.
Yeah, well, we just have that sizzle reel, which is great.
We have the sizzle reel and we have the
behind the scenes.
Yeah, exactly. So they're the Comic-Con one and then that little behind the scenes, just people being silly on set.
Yeah. Awesome. So that does it for our news. And what we wanted to talk about next is kind of just catch up a little bit on some of what's going on with DC Rebirth. We talked about a few months ago kind of the DC Universe Rebirth. And we just wanted to talk about Volume 1 of the Batman title from Rebirth entitled I Am Gotham. And so this volume finished about about 3 or 4 weeks ago. It was a 6-issue run called I Am Gotham. And we'll just give you kind of a brief synopsis and kind of talk about some of our thoughts about where Batman's going in this title. And so it starts off with Batman essentially, we'll keep it real brief here, but essentially having to save a plane. And he pretty much almost sacrifices his life. Yeah, he almost sacrifices his life in order to save the plane. But at the last moment, he is saved by two superheroes, Gotham and Gotham Girl. And so the story is about kind of Batman interacting with Gotham and Gotham Girl, who have pretty much Superman abilities. They have strength and flight. I don't know if they have other ones that we're not aware of or that I saw.
You know, it's been a little bit since I read this, so I can't remember. Yeah. They have strength, flight. I'd have to look at that scene where Gotham fights the Justice League, because maybe they show other powers
in there. I think he might have some lasers.
Could be. We'll get a look at it here.
We'll look at it. But anyways, so they're working together and trying to figure each other out, how to help each other, help Gotham. And then Hugo Strange shows up with the Psycho Pirate, who has the ability to manipulate emotions. And he gets a hold of Gotham. Gotham goes on a rampage and kills an entire SWAT team. And then things escalate quite quickly.
Yes, they do. basically, over the next issue, we have Gotham becoming more and more of a problem. Batman calls in the Justice League to deal with it. We find out that Gotham, and both Gotham and Gotham Girl, are able to scale their powers. But we find out that they kind of bought their powers with their own life force. So, like, the faster they use their powers, the faster they will die. And so, I think the line is, like, they could be at this level for years, they could be Superman for a week, or they could be a god for a few hours. And Gotham eventually burns himself out and dies, which is sad.
Yeah, and then there's one more title, which I've talked about a little bit when we talked about our top Batman moments. But it's just kind of an epilogue and kind of tying up the loose ends for that run, and which I thought was a really great little touch. So let's talk about this. What did you think about kind of this first little run of Batman Rebirth?
So a question I like to ask myself, especially with these Rebirth titles, is what are they trying to show us about the character? Because we can't lose sight. Batman. This book's about Batman. So what purpose does it serve to introduce Gotham and Gotham Girl? What does that make us learn about Batman? What part of his character does that emphasize? And for me, it was that the Batman of Rebirth is just a nicer guy than we've seen him in a while.
Mm-hmm.
He, maybe not too long ago, he would have come across Gotham and Gotham Girl and said, you know, F you guys, get out of my city. Like, this is my city. He says that to Superman all the time. Get out. Metropolis is yours. This is my city. He would not let anybody help him. Also in this, he's got Duke Thomas that he recruited to help him. He's some kind of Robin-ish thing. I don't know. I'm still a little bit behind, so I haven't seen anything about Duke after, in these first 6 issues anyway. Maybe there's some after.
And he's still figuring out his role too, so.
Anyway, I just love that we get to see that it's the opposite of what Batman says in Hush, where he's like, deep down, Superman's essentially a good guy, and deep down, I'm not. Well, we see that deep down, he is. He's a good person.
Mm-hmm.
He takes these people under his wing. He remembers saving Gotham's life in an alley in circumstances that mirrored the murder of the Waynes. That was one of my favorite scenes.
Yeah.
And how it inspires Gotham to want to save the city. And Batman helps him in that, because he understands what it's like to want something like that. So I just thought that was really cool. We're learning about Batman, that he's a good person, that he's there to teach, help others, and he's heroic.
Yeah, no, definitely. And for me, it was almost like every other... I liked every other issue.
Uh-huh.
And I guess that's just the nature. This is, to be honest, this is the first, like, kind of issue-by-issue kind of run that I followed in quite a long time, if ever. And so it was... I don't know. I just felt like I really got involved emotionally in one, and then I was like questioning how good the next one was.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't super consistent for me, but I definitely like what you're saying there. It's a different Batman than what we've seen, and it kind of has to be. And I like that Tom King is kind of taking a different approach, because Scott Snyder has such like kind of a definitive Batman that a lot of people have kind of gotten used to, and so.
Yeah, I'm totally happy to see a new take that is equally as definitive. This is really resonating with me a lot because I like to see that my hero is a good person.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the reasons that I really respect The Dark Knight Returns for what it is. I think it's a fantastic piece of literature, but I'm not a huge fan of the way that that Batman is. But this Batman is one that I can get behind and support him without having to defend him for shooting people on the head,
yeah,
or like lacerating and just eviscerating somebody's knee and just saying, he's young, he'll walk again. Like, he probably won't walk again. I saw what you did to that guy's leg.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is good to feel, because as Batman fans, you mm-hmm. bring up a good point that we often have to kind of defend Batman.
Yeah, this is just a good guy. He's not out there.
He's not reckless.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I like the point that you brought up, too, about he doesn't shove away Gotham and Gotham Girl. I really like that as well. He's a little more open to taking someone under his wing and kind of mentoring them than he has been in most of the other stories that I've read. Mm-hmm.
And I know we're not talking about other titles today, but that goes with a common thread with Detective Comics Rebirth. Mm-hmm. We've read a couple of those, at least. I'm not all the way caught up on Detective Comics.
Yeah, we'll do an episode on those, too.
But same thing. We see him making a team and training them and, like, allowing people to do their part, which is not traditionally something that happens. Usually, it's just Robin.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Huntress. I don't know. It depends on the iteration.
Yeah. And a lot of times, he has them for, like, one specific purpose. Like, you have one job to do and then get out of my way, you know?
Exactly.
Like, but he's letting people grow, and I like that a lot.
Well, cool. Let's see. Let's discuss something else here.
Yeah, I really like the art. I thought it was a beautiful comic. I feel like one thing, I want to read more Tom King, and I've started mm-hmm. reading I Am Suicide, and we'll probably talk about that once that run's done. That's volume 2.
Yeah.
But I feel like this Batman doesn't have quite an established voice yet. Like, I need to hear his inner monologues a little more. Like,
That's true.
Like, even though the acts are kind of heroic and he is a good mm-hmm. guy, I don't feel like I really know this Batman.
I didn't notice that until you mentioned it, but I think that's true.
And I think part of it's, you know, you're introducing Gotham and Gotham Girl, and they have a lot to say to kind of bring up, you know, at least for Gotham, kind of a beginning, middle, and end of his whole existence.
We spent a lot of time on two minor characters in this run that highlighted some good things about the main character, but we've yet to have a run that's about Batman or about Bruce Wayne, which I would love to see at some point. Because now that you're talking about it, the inner monologue is one of the defining things about Batman that I love, and really a lot of comic characters have a good one.
Yeah.
But Batman's always like, you see why he's so effective, because he's like, I know this guy, he's wanted on this hit list by the FBI and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And you almost get more of that from his conversations with Duke in this one than you do with just Batman by himself. So I'm excited to see where this goes. Do you have anything else to kind of say about DC Rebirth? I guess I'll mention the last issue. I thought it was just a beautiful way to end and really kind of really sold me on this iteration of Batman. Just essentially, there's really nothing that, like, quote-unquote happens in this episode. It's just essentially Gotham Girl is having a monologue, having a conversation with Hank, her now-dead brother. And Batman just kind of consoles her and is able to relate to her and show her who he is and kind of his past as well. And I just felt like I learned so much about Batman just in that two pages, really, that just kind of really helped me empathize and get on board with it.
Well, all in all, a great run. We recommend it. I will give it, what will I give this? I'll give it maybe 7 out of 9 crashing airplanes.
Are those good ratings? Because crashing airplanes aren't usually something we would esteem.
It's good, trust me.
Oh, okay. I would probably say the same. I'm not going to do the math, but I was thinking like a 4 out of 5. And so 7 out of 9 is pretty close there too.
Yeah, probably.
It's not as consistent as I would like it to be. There was still like every other issue, like I said, was a little choppy and I wasn't super invested in it. But overall,
such is the nature of the the main title.
That's true. Yeah.
It's really rare that you get a run where, like, every single book is great or every single issue. Usually there's a couple that are just weird. Mm-hmm. Or even whole volumes.
Yeah. But it was enough to get me on board, and I'm excited to keep reading.
Yeah, it made me excited to keep reading as well.
Cool. Well, anything else to say about I Am Gotham?
I don't think so. If we can move on to our next little portion here, we're going to talk a little bit about the Justice League episodes, Paradise Lost, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, so we've had these ones cooking for quite some time now. And we wanted to include it on our last one where we talked about the Wonder Woman stuff, but we try to keep these episodes pretty short for you listeners. Andy, why don't you give us a brief kind of synopsis of Paradise Lost?
Okay, so what's going on in this episode is basically Wonder Woman's feeling a little bit homesick. She didn't part with her mother on the best of terms. You know, she kind of stole away in the dead of the night, picked up the Wonder Woman gear, and went off to save the world. And so I think it's like while they're watching a little girl reunite with her mom during a hurricane or something, that she just feels really bad. She decides to go back. So she shows up to Themyscira, and she just finds this scene of devastation. There's people, like, turned into statues, including her mom. She talks to this sorcerer, Felix Faust, who reveals that he has turned everybody into stone, and he wants Wonder Woman to find some artifacts for him. We don't know what these artifacts are yet. So anyway, she goes off, she starts searching a museum for an artifact, and she's pretty much just tearing up the place, because a giant statue comes to life and tries to kill her.
Mm-hmm.
And Superman drops by and he's like, what is going on here? So yeah, from that point, the Justice League teams up to help her find these artifacts. They go get them in entertaining fashion. And turns out this is a key to open the gates of hell, pretty much. And it gets opened up, Hades comes out, a huge battle ensues with a bunch of undead skeletons and, you know, that kind of thing. And eventually they throw Hades back in there. But here's the plot twist. Wonder Woman still gets exiled from Themyscira because she brought men onto the island.
Mm-hmm.
That's which, a no-no. Yeah, you can't do that. But it still left a bitter taste in my mouth.
Yeah.
You people would all be statues if not for Diana bringing men onto this island. Anyway, so that's the quick synopsis. So, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are, I was glad that this episode wasn't just Diana. I mean, it sounds silly, and of course it's not going to be because it's a Justice League show.
Mm-hmm.
But we spend, like, the first 10, 15 minutes with just Diana, essentially. And, I don't know. I was just glad that we were able to open up to the other characters, because I felt like I wouldn't have been sold on another, like, 40 minutes of just Diana. Just kind of, I don't know, this version of Diana, it's very classic and true to the comic, mm-hmm. but it's just very kind of like very bold and very, I don't know, I just kind of got bored of it.
Yeah, well, we like her because of her relationships with the other Justice League members.
Exactly.
Not because, I mean, it's like that with almost any Justice League member. I don't want to watch them on their own when I could be watching them interact with the other heroes.
Yeah. And so I thought the timing was good of just when I was starting to get sick of it, they brought it all together. So far as my thoughts overall, I don't have a ton to say about this episode. It was pretty decent overall. I do like kind of the ending of how it just kind of, I don't know, you can tell that Diana's mother is torn at having to kind of exile her, and you understand it. I was glad to see some emotion there, and it wasn't just like a heartless banishment. But I thought that was a really nice way to kind of end the episode.
I know, it didn't seem quite consistent with what I knew about at least this version of Hippolyta, considering that Themyscira would not really be a civilization anymore without Diana and Batman and Superman and the Flash.
Right.
And Martian Manhunter. So, boo. I am officially not a fan of Hippolyta anymore. I hope we never see her again. But I think we do.
Until May.
Okay.
And even in the series.
So let's see. Other things I like about this. The scene with Wonder Woman and Superman fighting in the mall was cool. We kind of glossed over that.
Mm-hmm.
But they had a spell on them that made them think that the other person was like a crazy demon monster. And Superman figures it out first because he saw their reflection in the water, I think. And so he immediately stops fighting. But I thought it was cool to establish that Wonder Woman can kick Superman's trash.
Oh, yeah.
Like, she has enough power to knock him out if he's not defending himself. When they were both fighting, it was pretty even. But the instant Superman stopped, he got steamrolled by Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And luckily, they landed by some mirrors so that she could see that she was beating up Superman and not, like, some horned monster.
Mm-hmm.
But Wonder Woman is very powerful in this show, and I feel like Superman is powered down quite a bit from what he is in the comics, so they come out almost even a lot of times.
Yeah.
Except in the episodes that have, like, Darkseid in them, we don't really see Superman do anything spectacular ever.
Yeah. And so, you brought up an interesting thought that I had. It's just, I mean, this is true of a lot of Justice League, but I felt like in this episode, you brought up the mall scene, there is a lot of, like, unnecessary collateral damage. And one of them...
It's a hallmark of this show, honestly.
It's totally true. But the one that kind of made me laugh that was entirely unnecessary, in my opinion, was when they first get to the mall, mm-hmm. and they see the artifact that's, like, buried, like, 10 feet down or something. And all of a sudden, Superman goes into, like, a spinning drill.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It makes this huge hole, like, in the middle of the mall. And I'm like, couldn't you have, like, gone outside the mall and just come at it at an angle? I don't know.
Yeah. Anyways. He really has callous disregard. Guard for structures.
This is very true.
I mean, we were talking about this, maybe I've said this on the podcast before, but in Batman v Superman, I'm reasonably confident that you never see either Batman or Superman use a door to any building. They either come in through the wall, the ceiling, the window, the floor, punch through the drywall. Like, you never see those guys coming through a door. It never happens. And like, I really want to go back and just pay attention to that to make sure that I'm not making a false claim here, but I do not think superheroes use doors. It just doesn't happen, especially not in cartoons.
It's a privilege you get with your powers. It's part of your contract.
So, cool. Sorry we don't have a ton to say about this.
since there wasn't a ton to say, I thought of just kind of a couple of discussion questions since we've been talking a lot about Wonder Woman and the new movie. The first one I thought is, how do you think this Themyscira will compare to what we will see in the film next year?
So I think the film, from what I've seen in the trailers, it looks to be a little bit more of a hardened place. Whereas this Themyscira, they talk about being warriors, but the way it looks is kind of more like a classical Greek structures, architecture. And that brings to mind the things that the Greeks were famous for. They weren't famous for their warriors, really. They were famous for philosophy and creation and advances made in science and politics. And that's kind of the vibe I get from this Themyscira. And it doesn't look like we're going to get that same Themyscira. It looks like we're going to get a very hardened, warlike, almost Spartan place.
Yeah. I'm just curious, too, because like, we've seen that one scene where they're kind of all walking up to a sort of throne of sorts. But that's really the only, like, structure that we've seen of Themyscira. In this new trailer, we got little glimpses of her, like, getting her sword and shield and costume. But, like, we haven't really seen, like you brought up the good point that, like, this Themyscira in the Justice League looks very much just like a straight-up Greek town.
Yeah.
But I think this Themyscira,
it reminds me of Hercules a little bit.
Yeah.
Like the animated Disney movie.
Mm-hmm. And I think what we'll be seeing next year is probably going to be a little more minimal. I don't think there's going to be, like, I don't know, a city, per se, like we see in this Justice League.
We've seen very little.
That's true.
We've only seen the throne room, wherever she gets her sword and shield from, and then outside on the beach.
Which just looks beautiful. That's awesome. Anyways, the second question I had was, how do you think that do you think that the banishment will play out in next year's film?
You know, I think it probably will. I think we'll see that, because I'm just thinking over Batman v Superman and even the Wonder Woman trailer. Why is she out in the world working as an antique dealer when she could just be hanging out on Themyscira? If she swore that she was going to not, like, be Wonder Woman again and try to save the world, why is she still out there?
Yeah.
She might be banished.
Yeah.
That's a good theory.
Those are my thoughts exactly, that she lost hope and, like, kind of faith in humanity between, you know, the Wonder Woman film and BVS. And if you really did, just go back home. You know what I mean? Go to your people. But I think there's a reason she can't. And so, what do you think will lead up to kind of that banishment? Do you think it's the fact that Steve Trevor's there? Do you think it's that she chooses to leave against her mother's wishes to go help
humanity? It might be a little bit of a combination of the two. I don't think it can be blamed on her that Steve Trevor's there, because his plane crashes on the island.
That's true.
She did dive out and get him, but I just don't think that'll play into it as much as maybe whatever decision she makes throughout the movie. Maybe choosing a relationship with Steve, something like that. I don't think I have enough information to make an accurate guess here, but
yeah, it could be
something along those lines.
Good point. It could be kind of a romantic thing. I don't know. Just choosing to stay with Steve versus just, you know, this life of,
yeah,
you know, Amazon celibacy, if we could say, call it that. Anyways, any other thoughts on Paradise Lost or kind of how it might compare to Wonder Woman?
Just one more thing I did think of. I thought it was really an interesting direction for them to go with Hades as opposed to Ares, who is traditionally... I mean, all the Greek gods are involved with Wonder Woman's... that's what I'm looking for. Mythology, yes, as of late. But Hades is just a weird one to pick. And to say that Hippolyta used to have a relationship with Hades was really weird. I just didn't like it.
Yeah.
And plus, I just didn't like how Hades looked. He was too smarmy. He looked like a 15th century Spanish scalawag.
Yeah, he doesn't look like anyone else in this universe.
No.
They kind of like cropped him out of some other show and put him in here. But yeah, and I think we'll probably talk about it, you know, sometime. Later in Justice League Unlimited, we learn a little bit more about their relationship. I think Hades actually formed out of clay Diana and Hippolyta, but he was banished before Diana was formed.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't remember that episode.
Yeah, I don't either. It's just kind of what I'm seeing here.
Okay,
anyways,
cool.
But yeah, overall a good episode. How would you rate it, Andy?
Oh, I will give this one... You know, I didn't like it as much. I think I'll give it like a 3 out of 6 Wonder Woman tiaras.
Yeah, I'd probably be right in the middle as well. Probably, sure, I'll go 3 out of 6 as well. I can't think of going higher or lower.
Yeah.
So, yeah, overall, decent. Didn't stand out by any means. But always worth your watch to get a little bit of Themyscira and Wonder Woman. So just for our last little bit here on our episode, we just wanted to talk about kind of a little segment that we introduced last time, which I forget what we titled it last time.
We didn't title it, is what happened. We're still in search of a title.
All right, well, today it's going to be called the Wayne Hall of Fame.
Oh, that's incredible. I can always count on Taylor makes all the titles for the posts on our website because he's got a gift for this kind of thing. If it was me, I would have called it something like I Like You and I Don't Like This Other Guy. Just something really lame and awful. Anyway, let's induct somebody into the Wayne Hall of Fame, shall we?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the identity of this mysterious benefactor remains unknown, but during the Cincinnati versus Memphis college football game here in the USA, a man dressed as Batman steps onto the field and calmly nails a 27-year-old. We're gonna have to edit that out. Calmly nails a 27-yard field goal.
That was beautiful.
You know they're never gonna hear that, right? I can't leave that unedited. This is a family podcast, and I'm still gonna leave this so you'll know that I messed up, but you won't know what I said. You'll probably be able to guess though. Alright. Anyway, Batman kicks a field goal. What are your thoughts on this?
I thought it was great. You know, he's in his full garb. His costume is awesome.
This is a good-looking suit. One of the best suits I've ever seen that's not, like, at Comic-Con.
Yeah. And I love how much, like, he calmly kicks the field goal, but he freaks out afterwards. I thought that was great just to see his excitement.
Yeah. I'm not a semi-professional kicker, but I have made quite a hobby of kicking things in my life.
Like 27-year-olds.
Oh my gosh. I don't approve of this kick. He was frankly lucky that it went through. I do approve of the Batman costume, though. This was pretty awesome.
How easy do you think it is to kick in that costume, though?
It's not easy, but if you can't, if you can only barely do it, what are you doing on the field? This is borderline Hall of Fame.
Okay.
Let me establish that. This guy is nowhere near the guy from last time who was driving around in a Batmobile. But he still kicked a field goal, which is true. It's good.
But if you're looking for somebody in the crowd, I'm going to pick Batman.
Yeah. I'd rather have Batman than a real kicker.
Yeah, me too. Put him on the team.
Okay. Well, that's the guy that's getting inducted into the Hall of Fame, the Wayne Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
As for somebody who will not be inducted, and what are we calling this?
The Bane Hall of Shame.
The Bane Hall of Shame. Yes, Bane is quite shameful. And joining Bane in the Hall of Shame this week is Wiz Khalifa. Mr. Wiz Khalifa tweeted out something quite inflammatory to those of us who love the Bat. He says, "Batman got lucky Will Smith's daughter was in the way." Did he really? What's your analysis of this, man. Taylor?
I was afraid you'd ask me that question.
Why, do you not have an analysis?
No, I do. I do. Just, like, I can see his point. You know what I mean? Like, he had him, like, at almost point blank. But, you know, I don't think Batman would have swooped in on him if he wasn't ready to take down Deadshot. Deadshot's always armed and loaded, you know what I mean? And so...
No, he's got a plan here.
He's got a plan. So I just don't think we got to see that, you know, plan in full fruition.
Because of the daughter.
Right.
So I have full confidence that Batman could have taken him out. He dispatched him on the ground pretty quickly. I mean, normally you follow that up, Batman probably would just jumped right on top of him and pounded his face in.
Yeah.
But there's a cute little girl standing in the way. You can't do that in front of his daughter.
Right, and I think Batman knew that, and yeah. He knew there wasn't going to be a confrontation because the daughter was there. Otherwise, he would have swooped in an entirely different fashion, taking him down before Deadshot saw him.
Yeah. So, here's something interesting that this brings up. This made me realize that I want nothing more than to see... Well, there's a couple things I want more. But I want to see Will Smith's Deadshot and Batman head-to-head without a daughter around. I think that has the potential for some very cool fight choreography, some very cool cinematography. There were rumors a while back that Will Smith was going to be in his Batman movie, but those have kind of died off, so right. It makes me think that they're not happening. I do want to see this at some point. Hopefully it happens. Hopefully Will Smith is around for long enough and Ben Affleck's around for long enough that we can see those two go at it.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Oh my gosh, I just remembered another piece of news that's huge that we never covered, I don't think.
Well, let's get to it.
Okay, sorry, this is just... I'm very personally attached to this, so that's why I just got so excited about it. So, a while back, this was like an official press release from Warner Brothers, I think. They announced that Young Justice Season 3 is in production right now.
Did we not talk about this? Oh, no, we didn't.
We didn't talk about it. You and I talked about it when we were at work together. But, so Young Justice Season 3, there's so many people out in the world that could not be happier about this, myself included. This is borderline my favorite DC animation. I love Young Justice. Young Justice made me into a fan of Robin, like a big fan of Robin. I always liked Robin, but the Dick Grayson on Young Justice is incredible. And also, it displays a level of smart, confident writing that you don't often see in a show intended for children. It was very entertaining to me. I remember watching this with my little sisters, and they got totally into it too. Like, it's just a really great show that needs to be out there. People have been binge watching it on Netflix for over a year, only to attempt to get people to pay attention to the fact that we love it,
right?
And it looks like it worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which I think is great, just that, you know, the developer saw a need and found a way to make it happen. And it is interesting. I'm curious to see how it will be distributed, because I almost think that more likely than a serial run on a TV channel, we're probably going to see this direct to Netflix, is my guess.
I don't think that's a bad guess for a couple reasons. It's obvious that Netflix has a lot more pull than they used to, because the way we got this is because we just watched it on Netflix over and over again. Mm-hmm. Why not just leave it there?
Right. they could have been the ones to approach Warner Brothers and say, hey, we're willing to fund a Young Justice if you
can get. And if I remember right, the reason this got shut down was because of, like, toy sales or something really dumb, and really? Cartoon Network was just being really awful about it. Like, I don't want to see you go back to Cartoon Network.
Anyways.
I would love to see this on Netflix. I think that would be a great idea.
Yeah, it makes it more accessible to a lot of people. And I think, you know, Netflix is kind of on fire right now.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think this will just kind of add gasoline to the flame, you know, of just, like, saying, hey, you know, you like something, you're mad that your show got canceled, well, good news, you know, we can bring it back up for you.
And they've done that before.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the
Arrested other Development.
And Star Wars Rebels, I think they brought back, or Clone Wars.
Clone Wars, did they?
They added an extra season or two onto the end. I'm trying to remember which one it was.
You got me there. I'm not into Star Wars animation too much.
Me neither. That's just news I heard. Anyways.
Huh. So the point is, let's get some Young Justice Season 3 on Netflix so I can binge it. Because the nature of the stories told in Young Justice are long-form stories. It's not even like Justice League, where you're pretty much done with your plot in one or two episodes. They're season-long things.
Yeah.
It's written a lot like some of the greater TV shows of our time. You know, Prison Break, Breaking Bad, those things that have Stranger these big, things. Long storylines. I haven't seen Stranger Things yet. I'll get to it.
Okay. Speaking of getting to it, I need to get to Young Justice. It's been on my list for a while, and
we'll watch it. We'll do an episode about it once Taylor, you know, stops being lazy, watches Young Justice.
I'm trying to catch up on my CW TV right now.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Young Justice is getting there.
Okay, so let's just have a poll from the listeners. Would you guys rather have an episode about Young Justice or about Arrow, Flash, Supergirl, and Legends of Tomorrow?
I'm pretty sure I know the answer to that question.
Are you sure?
I don't know, maybe not. Maybe our listeners will surprise us.
I think you're underestimating Young Justice.
No, that's what I'm saying. My answer would have been Young Justice.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. I was having faith in Young Justice.
Well, let's just see. We'll get to it.
Okay.
We're busy guys, but we do our best. All right, so sorry for the Young Justice interruption.
Oh, no. That was a pleasant and welcome interruption.
Anyway, so Wiz Khalifa is in the main Hall of Shame. That's the takeaway.
He may redeem himself at a later time.
Well, he's already partially redeemed because they've been using his music for the Lego Batman movie.
That's true.
So
I'm black and yellow. Anyways, so that's all we have for you today.
We do have a little listener feedback if we want to get that in.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is pretty long. I'm just going to take a couple of it. David W., a frequent listener, he's got some good input about Kieran Hines, who was just recently cast as Steppenwolf. I haven't seen Game of Thrones, so I wasn't familiar with him, but he listed off a bunch of other things that he's been in. So he was Aberforth Dumbledore in The Deathly Hallows Part 2, which I didn't know. I tend to remember the books more than the movies when it comes to Harry Potter, but I'll go back and look at that for sure. And he was Roy Bland in Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. Let's see. Yeah, so he's in that. And then he was calling us out. Seriously, guys, a Wonder Woman heavy episode, and you didn't do a review for the Wonder Woman-centric Justice League episode, Paradise Lost. Seems like a missed opportunity. Well, hopefully we have rectified that today.
It was on our game plan the whole time, but...
Yeah,
we try to spread things out.
Okay, one more thing is he seems like it's most possible that Dr. Poison is the identity of the female antagonist in Wonder Woman. And then regarding the newest Wonder Woman trailer, I agree that the electric cello "Is She With You" theme is a bit more jarring this time in the title show, though. We just kind of mentioned that. I was saying that I'm not really a fan of the Wonder Woman theme from BVS in the context of Wonder Woman. I haven't liked it in either of the two trailers so far, and it looks like he agrees with this one at least. This trailer.
Yeah. I can say that I liked it the first time more than the second time.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I feel like the second time around, it's kind of more developed that this is her show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I love that Wonder Woman has a theme. I think that's great.
Yeah. And it's a good theme. It's great.
So, yeah. One last thing. We did get a review on iTunes, and I was so happy about this because, guys, this is how we get the word out there about Beyond the Batcave. We get some iTunes reviews. So if any of you are out there feeling particularly generous, please go on there and give us a good review so that we can get the word out to more people who want to listen to some news about Batman. So I'll bring this up really quick and we read it off. Did you find it over there? Okay. Here we go. Got it. So this is entitled Podcast Gold. 5 stars. Such a normal way to rate things. Maybe I should adopt the 5-star system for Justice League.
Is this a new system to you?
Okay. So this is by Manny9026. That's probably the same Manny that always tweets at us. He's a frequent listener. I like him. Good guy. But if it's not, then we still like you, Manny, whoever you are. Love hearing this podcast, and they really put nice inputs and thoughts. One of the best ones out there. Highly recommended. Wow.
Well, thank you, Manny.
It warms my heart.
Very kind words.
So yeah, please, please get on iTunes, review us. It just helps get the word out there for everybody so they can find out about the podcast.
Yeah, and that's about a wrap for us. If you want to follow along with our Justice League series, the next episodes we will be reviewing is called War World, Part 1 and 2.
Ooh, this is a good one. I remember this one from when I was a kid.
Yeah? Oh man, I'm excited. And so we'll probably get to those here pretty soon, since there's kind of a gap between the new movies, and we've got... But we do have some news and things like that, and lots of other things we want to bring on. So, but if you do want to reach out to us, we would love to hear from you. We are on Twitter at Beyond the Batcave. We also have a Facebook page, Beyond the Batcave, the Batman-centric DC Movies podcast. Or you can just comment directly on any of our episodes, or send us an email at thebatcave@beyondthebatcave.com.
To this day, nobody has sent an email. They've only used the other forms of communication.
Which is fine. Whatever.
Yeah, you guys do what you want.
Fits your fancy.
So, we'll leave it there for you. So, my name's Andy Piper.
And I'm Taylor Jackson. And we're signing off.